Hack the Entrepreneur is part of Rainmaker FM, the digital business podcast network. Find more great shows and education at rainmaker.fm.
Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me again today. I'm your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a salesperson turned business owner turned entrepreneur. He's an experienced and successful serial entrepreneur based out of the greater Nashville area with a total of $24 million in annual revenue last year. In 1998, he started his first company, Absolute Wireless, which now owns and operates 15 wireless retail stores throughout Tennessee. My guest is also the founder of Callproof, a software company dedicated to maximizing the efficiency of outside sales teams for businesses all over the United States. Now, let's hack Robert Hartline. Today's episode of Hack the Entrepreneur is brought to you by Hack the Entrepreneur, the book, Hack Number 41, The Best Way to Be Wrong. I'm going to tell you the best way to be wrong. When I have to close down a project I've been working on, I have to apologize to everyone that it didn't go the way I wanted it to go, and I feel bad about that. Afterwards, I can learn, which is the best way to be wrong. What did I learn? What's good? What's bad? What can I really take from it? The only way wrong ends up being bad is if you learn absolutely nothing. If you fail at something, remember you have to re-language failure to be an outcome you didn't expect. Chris Brogan. Get this and 49 other hacks at hacktheentrepreneur.com/book, or more simply, go to htebook.com right now. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur, and today we have a very, very special guest. Robert, welcome to the show.
John, thanks for having me.
Absolutely my pleasure. Absolutely my pleasure. I think this is going to be a lot of fun.
I sure hope it will be.
It will.
In fact, I know it will be.
There we go. That's the attitude. All right, Robert, let's jump straight into it. Robert, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Well, it's kind of a mixed bag. I fall in the trap of whenever I'm like faced with a challenge, I default to technology as the solution. And sometimes I win at that and sometimes I lose. Sometimes I tend to overcomplicate the issue by finding a technology solution, but sometimes I'm real lucky too.
Wow. So what's an example of this? Like, we all have problems, obviously issues we deal with. So defaulting to technology.
Well, yeah. For me, I have, you know, I wear a lot of different hats. I'm a serial entrepreneur, so I have three other businesses. And, you know, one of my businesses is in retail. And with retail, you have lots of people. I have 150 people on this team, and they're in the retail space. And often I find myself with a challenge that I, you know, kind of want to automate and fix. And it could be, you know, we do a survey to our customers, and you know, you buy something from us. We send you a survey and say, hey, how'd we do? And you know, before I used to have a system where you'd respond and say you did terrible. And I didn't really have a system to make sure that that response saying terrible went to the right people. And so often big corporations, you know, do surveys, but nothing ever happens. It goes off in this la-la land. So, you know, for us, we developed a system to automate, make sure that the response from the client goes to this, you know, for instance, in our case, a store manager and someone that could actually handle the issue. So it's not, you know, often the ether. And
right.
So,
because you're right. Lots of people do the survey because we've been told to do the survey, but then we don't do anything with it. And I think you're actually, your customers are worse off for having gone through the effort to fill out the survey and then you just don't even get to it.
Yeah, exactly.
So technology to you, and say with the survey, retail outlet to survey to see how things are doing and then getting it to the right person. Is this for scalability, or is this for just simply automation and removing a person in it, or is it literally to create a deeper sort of relationship with your customer?
Can I say all of that? Yeah, I mean, all of that. Yeah, for sure. Because number one, my most important person in my day is my customer. I know so many people will say it's their employee. And if they take care of their employee, it takes care of the other. But the reality is I got to take care of my customers. And, you know, when you're dealing with trying to communicate with large numbers of people in a training scenario, you know, you're only as good as the worst person on the team. And if your worst person on the team doesn't read their email or understand the training they're supposed to do, and you know, they could be doing something wrong in the store that affects that experience. And, you know, really the reason you do surveys is to uncover patterns. And if, you know, a subset of customers are telling us one particular thing is wrong, it's up to us to figure out what that pattern is and to correct it. And, you know, automation is the way you kind of do it on a scalability model that works to be able to fix things. But, you know, I back to your original question, the default to technology has always been something that I've always tried to do, whether it's, you know, developing an app or something that kind of solves part of the problem. Of course, we can always overcomplicate our world by trying to push technology down a problem that's not necessarily the right solution all the time.
Yeah, no, exactly. It can, looking for the perfect app to do, or the perfect like piece of software to do the thing that you want, sometimes can just be a form of procrastination and actually avoiding.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and a lot of it too is like, you know, you can't give great customer service through technology, really.
Right.
I mean, you still got to train the fundamentals on how to take care of a customer and the right attitude to have. And there's no way to, yeah, you could automate some things, but if the data you collect, it's not actionable stuff that actually people use, then you're just out collecting data for just what purpose? You know, what why bother? You know, it's just like, in our world, we have, CallProof is an app for managing outside salespeople, and it tracks daily activity. Now, if you buy my platform and you collect all this data and you understand how productive your salesperson is, da da da, but you never look at the data, then why bother? Because the whole purpose is to hold people accountable. And when you hold people accountable, they perform better. But, you know, there's so many organizations I see that I talk to, and they have a person on the team that takes all these activity reports from, you know, from salespeople all over the country, and they literally throw it away. They don't even look at it. And it's like, that doesn't do you any good. You got, you know, you have a member of your team that's going through this trouble. And wouldn't you hate to have that job where you collect data and they just throw it away? Like, would you just not be like, why am I here? This would be the worst job on planet Earth. What kind of value do you bring to the organization when you do that? But, you know, we all do this. I mean, we have, you probably have a fantastic Google Analytics account that you probably haven't looked in a while. And you'd probably find in the data that there's something you could do to improve or spend more time and energy pushing traffic to. But I think we're all bombarded with all the information we have at our fingertips at any given moment. And sometimes deciding what action to take on what piece of information is the hardest.
Exactly. Exactly. Very, very well said. And so in there, you said, you called yourself a serial entrepreneur and said you have three other businesses. So I know you didn't start there because nobody starts running multiple businesses and being a serial entrepreneur. So we need to go back if we can, Robert. There seems to be, looking back with all my guests, there seems to be this time in every entrepreneur's life, usually not going through it, but looking back, when they realize one of two things, that either they had this calling to make this huge difference in the world, or as seems to mostly be the case, they simply found they couldn't work for somebody else anymore. So I would love to know which side of the fence you see yourself on, Robert, and if you can take us back to when you discovered this about yourself.
I think for me, fundamentally, like for the last 5 years, I've had this overwhelming fear of death. And this fear of death has driven me to do things I would have not normally done. Because I look at my life like there's like almost like this countdown clock. And I have a limited amount of time. And why wouldn't I choose to live a life that I can design and build and have control over versus being in a world where I'm dictated what my day is like, you know? I mean, you know, for me, I started selling cell phones back in college. And I lived in this town in Tennessee called Murfreesboro. And it was when I got my first real sales job, meaning not door to door selling to consumers, but, you know, selling B2B. I drove to Nashville every day and I made that, you know, hour commute each way. And I got pulled over at 2 a.m. because I used to go and hang out and have fun and be single in Nashville and go home at night in Murfreesboro. And I get pulled over at 2 a.m. from a state trooper. And I literally told him, I said, I am so glad you pulled me over because you have forced me to move. Like, why am I driving this way? I needed something to get in my way and be like, dude, you're driving 2 hours a day, 5 days a week. Like, why on earth are you spending literally weeks of your life to go to a job? And so that's when I made the move to move. And then, you know, I love where I work. You know, sales gives you the ability to kind of be your own boss. And it's really a great baby step for anybody that's thinking that entrepreneurship is the, you know, for them. But, you know, because you, of course, you need to know how to sell if you're going to have start any kind of business mostly. But that was it for me. I mean, we all have a limited amount of time. And, you know, entrepreneurship, you know, I always ask people all the time, if I'd ask you, John, how many hours are there in the day? What would you say?
Not enough.
Not enough. But, you know, a lot of people would say 24. And the reality is there's more hours in the day because it's the hours of your team that you pay is how many hours you have. So if I had 100 people on a team and I have 8 hour workday, I have 800 hours a day. And for me, I love the power that I have as an entrepreneur to say, all right, I got these resources out there. And if I'm going to really maximize a potential earning power, I got to make sure those resources are in the right places. And I just love the control that, you know, you can build as an entrepreneur, these kingdoms, these just freaking networks of how everything can kind of work together. And, you know, the sky's the limit. And I really believe that.
Yeah, no, I totally do. And I love the, it sounds odd to say it like this, but I love your overwhelming fear of death. because I completely 100% agree with this. And I've been telling people this, this is why sometimes why I work too much even. And because I love the projects I work on and I don't want to be at that end. I know I have a finite amount of time to do all the cool stuff I want to do. And I don't want to be the person who regrets it at the end. So I get that, but
absolutely.
To go back to this salesperson, like how it's a great start into business. Like, do you see it as there's a term going around called intrapreneurship, mm-hmm. which is like being an entrepreneur, but within a bigger organization. To me, salespeople, you have to have that because usually you're external, you're outdoors and you're actually going door to door or going business to business, wherever it is, or working from a coffee shop, but you are making your own hours, making your own calls, making your own sales. And that's how you get paid, strictly not mm-hmm. by just showing up and putting in the hours.
Exactly. And, you know, it's the only, I got to speak at a high school yesterday for leadership. And I told them, I said, listen, the most lucrative job on planet Earth is in sales. And it doesn't require you have crazy amounts of schooling. It doesn't depend on special degrees or special pedigree. Anyone has the same ability to be an awesome salesperson with the right training. Even if you're like me, like super introvert, pretty shy around people. Like I hate freaking crowds of like networking events. They just make me want to just run out of the room because I just don't like standing around and talking to strangers. That's just not my DNA. Now, in a group of, you know, nerdy entrepreneurs that write software code, I freaking like those people. And I really, that's my tribe, but I just don't, you know, I know I'm going a little tangent, but you know, back to the salesperson, learning how to sell is absolutely your first step to actually getting in that mode to be an entrepreneur. That's for sure.
I 100% fully endorse this because I agree fully. And sales are not super complicated things. It's not even always just, I mean, selling your ideas to people, that's essential to finding a co-founder, to getting a team behind you. You need to be able to sell your ideas and the enthusiasm even to ever create something out of nothing. It's essential. So at the beginning, Robert, you said that it's a mixed bag, but it's like the default to technology is your thing. Sales is obviously another one of your things. Now, every expert talks about the 80-20 rule in business. So do 20% of the work, get 80% of the results. You're supposed to do what you're good at and delegate the rest. Robert, right now, could you tell me something that you're absolutely not good at in your business?
Oh my God, organization. I am a freaking disaster. So I just the number of things that I have cooking, I delegate just about everything in my world. I have a thing on my board that says I do three things: lead, learn, and think. If I'm doing anything outside of the realm of those three things, then I'm doing the wrong thing. Now, am I perfect at it? No. I still get emails from customers and feel the need to address. You know, I still do some banking stuff, but mostly, you know, I got out of the technician, you know, e-myth side of the business about 10 years ago, and I've never looked back. So I focus on those three things.
Live, learn, and think. So the e-myth, this technician thing, this comes from the e-myth revisited, right? Or e-myth mastery?
Yeah. So, you know, yeah, those three things for me are lead, learn, and think. And I'm best suited leading my leadership team and really working on vision, working on why they do what they do. And then, you know, the learning aspect, you know, your podcast and other podcasts, I freaking just love the access to this information, listening to smart people talking about what's working and what's not working. I should get more value from people saying what's broken than what's working sometimes. But I mean, it just gives me a chance to really think about the business, and that's what I'm supposed to do. And you know, there's really not another book that does as good of a job as E-Myth does, walking through that technician phase. And we all, you know, do this. We default. I mean, like we're, you know, most people that are working in 9-to-5 jobs, or they have this autopilot thing going. And that's why you see all these people that they have like a life-changing event and they quit their job. Like something gets in the way of their autopilot, like somehow their autopilot got shut off. And sometimes it's an accident. It's a death. It's a death in the family. It's something with their children, or it's a trip. That's why I encourage everyone to go on a trip or go internationally, because sometimes that's a trigger to turn off the autopilot that we all have in ourselves. And once you have something trip that autopilot, you're either going to make a decision. Am I going to turn the autopilot back on? Or am I going to take my plane and go somewhere else? Am I going to take my life in a different direction? And, you know, everyone has different things that get in their way. Sometimes people are lucky. They get fired. And that's what the event was, to turn off the autopilot. So they can't go to work anymore. So what are they going to do? And so that's why, you know, some of the most traumatizing or life-altering things that happen to us are some of the best things that happen to us.
Yeah, exactly. And so I don't want to break the conversation too much, but this E-Myth book has been mentioned so many times on this show, and I read it years and years ago, and it totally changed the way I looked at a lot of aspects of business. So right now I want to, the first five people who email me and tell me that they would like this book and that they heard Robert mention it, I will send you a copy in the mail of the book. So just email me john@hacktheentrepreneur. And just a quick note that last time I did this was about a month ago for a Seth Godin book, and I got overwhelmed, guys. Sorry, with the requests, and I didn't even respond to all of you. That doesn't mean that you shouldn't do it. Email me again, and the first five people will get a copy of it from me. I'm going to say from Robert, though, but it's going to come from me. But because he mentioned it, I want to offer you, because I want you guys to have it. So sorry, Robert, I didn't mean to totally digress on you.
Oh, no, that's totally cool. You know, one thing that just came to mind, and I have not done this yet, and I would love to do it. I think this is a good E-Myth exercise to try, is, you know, I had a challenge with my second in command delegating. He was just not delegating. And now I haven't done this, and I would love to hear if someone in your audience does it, but I would love to handcuff one of my key members of my team. And and put an assistant with them and say, all right, here's the deal. The entire day you're going to be handcuffed and you have to tell this person everything you want to do. So you can't use your keyboard. You can only speak. You can't use your phone. And you have to tell your assistant everything you want to do. And I think if you did that for a whole day, it would force yourself to delegate, right? You'd have to.
You would have.
There's no way you could do it. And so the question would be, at the end of the day, would you be better off forcing yourself to listen? There's no way you can do this. You can't be the technician anymore. You have to freaking delegate.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. So to have any idea what Robert is talking about right now, email me and the first five people. Actually, with the Seth Godin book, I actually got generous and I gave away 10 of them, although I said five, but I still didn't even get back to everybody and I apologize, but please email me again and I'll get you that book. So Robert, you mentioned how you have all these things cooking and all these ideas going. At one point when you were talking about organization and how you, I think you said you are a freaking disaster because you just have so many things going. And we do as entrepreneurs, right? So we have all these ideas. So I want to move to projects. And projects can be a loose term. So whether it's a new business to start, which probably isn't because you have multiple going, but something within the business or something personally that you want to take on now. Ideas come to us when we're walking, when we're showering, they come through our inbox, they come probably from your employees. But how do you, Robert, and I want to know whether it's a written process or an internal process, but how do you decide right now when a project is worth your time, energy, and resources?
You know, there's a lot of projects that start out as just simple fixes that become these much bigger projects. You know, CallProof is a good example. I had an issue with managing my outside salespeople. No one was filling out the reports and no one was filling out CRM. And I wanted an automation tool and an app that automatically do that so the sales rep could focus on selling and not, you know, filling out activity reports. But, you know, I kind of look at all the projects I do. You know, I think if you think about your business like TechCrunch, you're going to screw it up. And what I mean by that is if you pay attention to TechCrunch, you see a lot of like just amazing runaway successes you hear about. You know, XYZ got all this funding and, you know, they've been open in 6 months and they're freaking runaway success. And from my experience with me and other entrepreneurs, that success does not run that fast. It's a long, slow journey. You know, my first business is 18 years old, and although still a teenager, it's way different and it took a way much longer time period to do scale and, you know, be profitable than I ever imagined it would take. Now, the second business is a lot faster, but it's, and I know the third and fourth will be faster. I kind of look at projects like I'm planting crops. I may go plant a crop here. I'm going to take a while to figure out product market fit. It's going to take a while to get customers on board. But as long as I keep feeding it and watering it and giving it sunlight and giving it attention, it will grow. And, you know, the fear is if you got too many crops you're fooling with at the same time, you don't have a good system to delegate, then your crops are going to die. So, but, you know, I'm looking at projects now and like these are 5-10 year things. These aren't any get rich quick. I can't have the expectation I'm going to have any kind of return for a while. And I'm comfortable with that. So many people, they get in it and they say, all right, I'm going to really work at this for the next 18 months, 24 months. And I'm going to, if it doesn't work, I'm going to do something else. Well, listen, I hardly see anything in technology that's a runaway success in 18 months. It just doesn't work that way.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. So you put 4 and 5 years as timelines onto things.
Yeah.
So like, even before we started talking, you mentioned like a new project of a podcast. There's not usually direct correlation of monetization tied to something like that. But if you start something like that, do you still put a huge timeline on it like that?
Oh yeah. I mean, I think in a podcasting world, and you know this, you got to put the time in.
You do. Yeah.
And you know, if you came out with 6 episodes and said, well, I guess I'm just not very good at podcasting.
The average is 12.
Yeah.
Where people stop. So.
Yeah. And it's just, you know, that's just not the way you, you know, it's, I look at, you know, podcasting is like prospecting. You know, if I'm going to go out and prospect and sell a product, I'm not going to go and say, all right, you know what? I'm going to prospect for 6 months and then I'm going to stop. You just keep prospecting. If you want more customers, you talk to more strangers. If you want a bigger audience, you got to talk to more people. And you got to talk all the time. And you got to say something compelling. I mean, you just can't just give up. And so many, I see so many people, they bounce from this to this to this to this. You know what? And, you know, honestly, I bounce from this to this to this, but I keep them going. I don't stop them. I put the sunlight and I put the water in there and, you know, I let it grow and I figure out what works. And sometimes it takes a lot longer to figure, you know, could I grow faster at a particular project if I dumped everything else? I probably could. But if those other things are generating income, why would you turn the income engine off? I guess you could sell it and then reallocate the money. But I just don't think that way. I like my kids, and I look at these projects as kids, and I want them to grow, and I want them to get older. I want them to have their own kids, and you know, and just, you know, I'll keep funding them until it doesn't make sense.
I love it. And the best thing is, Robert, is that the way you're doing it is exactly right for you. And the way some people need to focus on one project and one project only, I am not that person. I need multiple things going because I have a really short attention span.
Oh, yeah.
I was the kid who wasn't supposed to be able to do anything because I couldn't stay focused on stuff. So now I just have a whole bunch of different businesses running with other people and I get to jump in and out of them. And it's awesome. It perfectly works with my crazy nature.
Oh, and you know, I would probably promise you, because you sound like a lot like me, if I were to give you the symptoms of bipolar disorder, you would probably like, oh, that's me. Because if you read symptoms of bipolar, every time I read it, I'm like, oh my God, I'm freaking bipolar. So I am crazy. But most serial entrepreneurs that do crazy things are freaking crazy.
It's true. Yeah. And just the idea is that it's finding what works for you and really embracing it and going with it. And that's going to be different. What works for me, what works for you, what works for you out there listening is going to be different than what works for each of us. And that's kind of the point. Really figure out your unique strengths, your unique weaknesses, and run the hell with it. Because that's what's going to propel you to do the big, cool things. So, Robert, I want to wrap up on one final question for you. It's this concept I'm calling the entrepreneurial gap. So you've been, your first business is now 18 years old. You've been at this for quite a while. And as entrepreneurs, we are always projecting our success into the future, meaning that in 1 month, when you hit whatever metric you set, or in 6 months when you stand on that stage, or in a year when you hit that revenue goal, then you'll be successful, quote unquote. But of course, right before you hit that goal, you set five loftier ones into the future for bigger revenue goals, bigger stages, bigger whatever. It's just how we work and it's how we have to work. We need to push ourselves ahead. But as you know, when you walk towards the horizon, no matter how far you walk, you never get there. It gets further and further away. And from the outside, we look successful, but from ourselves, we sometimes live in this gap where we never get to see ourselves as successful. So Robert, right now, I would love it if you could stop, turn around, and look behind you. For the past 18 years, you've been building businesses. There's been highs, there's been lows, there's been wins and losses. But can you tell me how you feel about the journey up until today?
I get so excited about tomorrow. You know, I have this issue, and I'll call it an issue, is on Sundays. So, you know, I spend most of my time with my family on Saturday and Sunday. And about Sunday night, you know, I really try to detach from work as much as I can. And I start thinking about next week, and my head is full of stuff to do. And so I just get so freaking, you know, it's like this, it's like a little high. And I know you know what I'm talking about, where you're just like, you're almost like just giddy. Over, you know, I'm super positive thinker. Like I don't think that, you know, the end of the world is coming, although I do think about death, but I think about freaking doing amazing things. And, you know, obviously everything seems very rosy on Sunday for me that I'm working on. Then comes Monday and I'm like, oh, that's a lot harder to do than I thought it was going to be. Or, you know what? I sent that email out that I thought was a rock star to get some customers. And guess what? Nobody came or nobody responded. So I guess that's where it works for me.
Nice. I love it, Robert. I love it. Well, this has been an absolute blast getting to talk to you. So we've talked about your business and businesses in passing, but can you specifically tell the listener where they can find out more about you and your business, Robert?
Sure. I have a blog that I talk about managing salespeople and, you know, in fact, helping you become a better salesperson. You can visit callproof.com/blog and kind of read our blog that we have going. And certainly if you want to reach out to me, I'm easy to find at robert@callproof.com.
Excellent. And roberthartline.com? We send them there?
Yeah. Yeah.
Excellent. Because I dig it. I was on there earlier today. The E-Myth book will be linked to in the show notes. But of course, the offer still stands for the first 5 people to email me, john@hacktheentrepreneur. Spell John whatever way you want, and it will come to me, and I will send you a paperback version of it. Robert's also on Twitter @HeartlineRobert. And yeah, callproof.com and callproof.com/blog. I will link to all those in the show notes, so when you are done walking, running, working, whatever it is you're doing, get back to your computer. It'll be at hacktheentrepreneur.com. So Robert, once again, thank you so much for stopping by. Thank you for taking the time to chat with me today. I really do appreciate it. And please just keep doing what you're doing, because it is awesome and inspiring to watch.
Thanks, dude. Take care, man.
Robert, that was a lot of fun. Thank you so much for joining me. And I really had a blast. I don't get to talk to a lot of people on this show that are in playing the retail game. It's cool. It is. 15 stores retail doing millions and millions of dollars in revenue. It's cool. It's really cool. And I love the salesperson side of it as well. It's something, you know, that I admire, but I always talk about how I'm so not into the retail game, and talking to you kind of made me wistful. Is that the word for it? Kind of, it sounds cool. It sounds really real and hands-on, and there it's cool. I really dug our conversation, Robert, and I thank you for joining me. So you out there listening, I hope that you enjoyed it as much as I did. And I'm wondering if we picked up on the same things that Robert said. Because I have notes here, and then I went back. And then I looked at my notes, and then I went back, and I listened, and then I looked at my notes, and I went back again. And that third time through, there was something that Robert said. There's one thing that Robert said that became so very, like, that was it, right there. There it was. It seemed obvious. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
You know, a lot of people would say 24. And the reality is there's more hours in the day, because it's the hours of your team that you pay is how many hours you have. So if I had 100 people on a team and I have 8-hour workday, I have 800 hours a day. And for me, I love the power that I have as an entrepreneur to say, all right, I got these resources out there. And if I'm going to really maximize a potential earning power, I got to make sure those resources are in the right places.
And that's the hack. Robert. Robert, Robert, I want to say, boom. I love this. I've never thought about it in this way. And yes, there's lots of time I've thought about. I try and think about it every day. And there's a lot of time that I've talked about it on the show, on other shows, in my book, in lots of places. And that idea is leverage. It's the greatest thing we have. This is why when I said that I don't talk and I don't admire usually people and offline businesses, because I think that they don't have leverage. Robert, you just completely changed my mindset on it. The leverage is in simplest terms. So he says 100. Let's say you have 2 employees. You have 2 employees and there's 3 of you now that at 8 hours a day, that's 24 hours on your idea. That's 24 hours a day you are now working. That's a full day. You get up to 10 employees and you're at 800 hours or 80 hours in a day. That's really 2 weeks worth of work if you're not an entrepreneur. If you work for somebody, if you're an entrepreneur, it's quite a bit more. But that's powerful. That's a brilliant way. This is why, and it's all making sense to me now. We have this discussion, we as in me and guests have this discussion a lot about how they became sort of unemployable, quote unquote, at some point in their lives because of this feeling of working on your own dream, not working for somebody else's dream and not pushing towards their goals, but doing it for yourself. And this is the reason, because of that scale. When you're working for somebody else and being paid by the hour, it's their leverage point, not yours, which we all kind of knew. And I mean, this isn't like profound to me, but in its simplicity, it is. It's completely forming the way I'm thinking of leverage right now. And that idea of the more people, even the simplest tasks, even if I hire the person to mow my lawn at the same time that I am recording a podcast and bringing in a certain amount of revenue at this time and also having something else being done that I don't have, it's impressive. It's having people doing other things that propel you forward and allow you to do the things that you are the best at, not doing the things that you're not. This is leverage. Robert, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Well, that was a lot of fun. I have offered up a book. I hope you guys take me up on it. Again, I apologize to the people who emailed me about the Seth Godin books, and I didn't even get back to all of you. I apologize, but that wasn't because I didn't see your message. It was just because there was a lot of them. And so this goes out at different times to different people around the world. So I'm actually going to give it 24 hours from the time this publishes this episode. I'll give it 24 hours. Whoever ends up in my inbox then, I will put them all into a pile, a virtual pile, a digital pile, if you will. And my daughter's going to pick 5 people randomly. So the people who get to listen to it first don't necessarily get it. And so if you think that it's been too long right now when you're listening, it hasn't. John@hacktheentrepreneur.com. Tell me you want a copy of The E-Myth. I will send it. Last time I ended up sending out actually 12 copies of the Seth Godin book. I said 5. So if I get a really lot, I might just be extra generous. So yeah, drop me an email. I would love to hear. I'm not going to start spamming you from the email. Like, trust me, I didn't even respond to most of the people. That's what I'm apologizing for. This is a powerful book. It's a really, really good book. And it's one of those classics of business. So I would love to send you a copy, John@hacktheentrepreneur. 5 people will get a free copy sent right from me, probably via Amazon, but from me. All right, hacktheentrepreneur.com/reviews. Remember, if you're on an Apple device, I would absolutely love it. Hacktheentrepreneur.com/reviews takes you directly to the place where you can leave a rating and a review in iTunes. Please, it'll take you a couple of minutes and I would appreciate it so much. If you do, and you could drop in, and you're also on Twitter, drop in your @name, your handle, and I would love to go onto Twitter and thank you for doing that. If you're on an Android device, I do not blame you. Hacktheentrepreneur.com/Stitcher. And you can leave me a rating and review there, and it is just as valuable, if not more. All right. Thank you so much. I really, truly do appreciate you stopping by. I hope you are the winner of the new book. Drop me an email, john@hacktheentrepreneur.com. And then, please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.